It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go outside for a while and just smile. Just taking some clean, fresh air for me. Staying inside. If the weather's fine.
Good morning, Barcelona. You're listening to 106.9 FM, Radio Canal Barcelona, English Radio in the Morning. I'm Virgil, and today we're going to be caught up in songs, music, and words as we talk with the great singer and composer, Violeta Curry. Welcome, Violeta.
Good morning, Virgil.
Well, that's the best you got?
Good morning, Virgil.
That sounds more like you. Anyway, you know, most of us have had moments in the car, in the shower, in a karaoke bar when we thought that we could sing. But all the shows like American Idol, The Voice, America's Got Talent, all the rest of them, it kind of fueled that belief, or really fantasy. But at some point we realized, and we should realize, that we can't. When did you discover that you could sing?
Well, that's a great question. I actually never discovered I could sing. It was just something that I felt and something that was natural to me. And I used to sing along like everybody to music. But what I think the thing that was really important for me was the day I discovered harmony. And I didn't know what it was, but I knew I could do it. And that was listening to the Beatles. My sister had one of their first albums. And I was listening to a song, I think it was called Red Was the Color She Wore, something like that. And it was absolutely explosive in my ears, the three-part harmony they were doing. Hmm. And I didn't know what it was, but I suddenly just started doing the voices. And that's really what that was, the thing that set me on my track, basically.
Well, had you had musical training up to that point?
No, because I was very young. I must have been about 6 or 7. But we had music in the family because my father was a pianist, right. A jazz pianist.
But how did you know it was harmony? How did you know that, you know, that you could do that? All of a sudden that you could just pull it together?
I just started doing it. It wasn't that I knew. I didn't intellectualize it. It was just, I just started doing it. I heard the voices, and I guess it was pure imitation, really. That's how we learn, isn't it?
It is. Well, all of our listeners, you feel free to call into the show and talk with Violeta today. The number is 934-685555. By the way, Violeta will be appearing this weekend at Mayam. And here's a sample of what you might hear. And we'll be back to talk with her more right after this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, we need to give it up for that. That was our guest, Violetta Curry, singing a song by Nancy Wilson that she had done many, many years ago with Cannonball, I'll Never Will I Marry. And obviously that didn't happen in your case.
No. I actually, to introduce that song in my show, when I do it, I always tell people, look, you know, I don't know why I chose this song because I've done it twice now.
You're right, right.
But well, I'm still with the second one, so that's good.
Well, that's an important thing. That's an important thing. Now, we talked earlier a little bit before when you were on the show. Your father was a jazz musician. Now, tell us how that influenced your life growing up.
Yeah, my father was a jazz pianist, and it influenced me on many levels. It influenced me, obviously, musically, because I began to develop an ear, because Daddy would play so many types of records, jazz records, of course. But he had singers. His favorite singers were Sarah Vaughan, mm-hmm. Ella Fitzgerald, and Nancy Wilson. And then he had other albums as well. So I was listening to all types of music, not only jazz, but pop music that was coming in the house and black music. So first and foremost, of course, I was affected musically. That's where I kind of realized, oh, maybe I could do this as well. But then it also, my father's career affected me socially because Daddy brought home loads of different people from all types of backgrounds and ethnicities. They would come over. My mom was a great cook, and so we often had people over for dinner. And so I got to see another part of the world that maybe I wasn't seeing where I was growing up, because I grew up in Philadelphia in an all-black neighborhood. And then it also affected me emotionally, because I started realizing that I could express what I was feeling through music. So, yeah, it affected me on many levels.
No, I think so, because obviously, well, you may not have started off with formal training. You're just being there and absorbing everything around you. You know, it set a discipline in your mind. So then when you did begin to formalize your training, you already had that background in place that became easier then to acquire.
Yes, that's one of the things. Listening, of course, when you become a musician, listening, as in putting in hours of listening, just listening to other musicians, other singers, that's a really big and important factor. And because I was the baby of six children, my brothers and sisters were all older than I was, and they didn't want to play with me. So I spent a lot of time alone in my bedroom listening to music and singing. And I used to stand in front of the mirror, like most young girls do, with a hairbrush and sing into the hairbrush. And I would imitate everything I heard, or I would try to.
Well, that's the whole thing, because again, you know, then when you begin to, well, everybody, and you look at these young people who are out here on these various shows, American Idol, The Voice, and all that, they obviously are imitating a famous singer or someone that's influenced them.
Yes.
And then the question then becomes, how do you then make that leap from imitation to original?
Well, for me, it was really easy, because what happened was, when I came to Spain to live, the first place that I arrived in was Granada, a city of southern Spain. And that was because of my first husband, basically. I was there. And there were very few black people on the streets at that time in Spain, in the south of Spain anyway, because this was 1987, something like that. And so just going to bars and meeting people, I began to meet musicians, and they say, "Oh, what do you do?" And I would say, "Oh, I sing," not really having really any singing experience, but I told them that that's what I did. And of course, they gravitated towards me, because it was like, "Oh my God, a black American, a real authentic voice," you know,
right,
that kind of a thing. And I started being offered possibilities of just getting up and singing. So of course, my first few concerts were, on one level, disastrous, because you do have to learn a stage craft,
right,
you know, and that you can only learn by doing it. You're not going to learn it from reading textbooks or even from going to these schools that are out now where you can go, like the Fame or something. You got to be up on that stage.
Absolutely. And I've done that. I've worked with a couple of musicians, singers, and one of the things is it's difficult, you know, in trying to help them understand that going up and performing is not just a matter of playing songs or playing music. You got to understand pacing, staging. How do you grab the audience? Yeah. How do you maintain the level? How do you close a show?
Exactly.
And all of this is, you know, so different than also helping them to listen, as you say,
absolutely.
Because I'm saying, you know, okay, the song is good, but you know, you need to try to do it like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give them music to, you know, listen to how this singer does it or how this musician plays it, right? So you can just, you know, listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that's going to help you be able to interpret this piece of music a little differently.
Yeah, and find your way, actually, because whatever about listening, as I did, to thousands of singers and groups and all types of genres and music styles and whatnot, you still, there has to come a point where you develop your own style.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that comes with time. That is not immediate.
It comes with time and also a willingness to commit yourself to change.
Oh, well, that's a big thing. Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've seen some folks, you know, who've had a modest degree of success, or maybe even think it's been a great degree of success. And we said, you know, you could really do better if you think about, you know, making these few changes.
Advancing, yeah, absolutely, of course.
But they think, well,
studying.
I'm doing all right, you know, so I don't, you know, why should I change?
Yeah.
And this is the thing. Now, being around your dad and everything, you know, you saw the difficulties of an itinerant musician.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what kind of lessons did you take away that influenced your career professionally?
I think the biggest lesson I could say I picked up from my father. I mean, I was, as I said, I was the youngest of six. So I wasn't that aware of what being a musician really meant in the real world. Because I was very sheltered from that. For example, I remember once when my father was on the Johnny Carson show, it was a really big deal for us, first and foremost. But then
that was a really big deal.
That was a really big deal. But also the other thing was that I had to have special permission to be able to stay up and watch that show because Johnny Carson came on at 11:30 at night, you know? So that was, I would have been in bed by 8:30, you know? So little things like that. So I didn't really get to savor, so to speak, my father's career. However, the biggest thing that I learned from my father was that it doesn't matter what you do. The most important thing is that you be a good person and that you be as honest as you can with whatever it is you do. That would have been the lesson that I learned from him.
I think that's true because, again, you know, if you're up there on stage, you're bringing your life up there with you.
That's right.
And you've got to be able to communicate that to the audience so they can, so they feel that, you know, what you're doing is real.
You have to be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's a big responsibility to go on stage. I actually remember an anecdote. I don't remember exactly where they were playing. It could have been something like Valley Forge, PA, or someplace. It wasn't in Philadelphia. And Judy Garland was going to be the star. So my father and his band, Hines and Dad, Gregory Hines, the great tap dancer, their musical director.
Really?
Yeah, so I grew up with Gregory and Maurice at home and with Father Hines, or Chink Hines was his name, and Alma was their mother. So I grew up around them.
I never realized that. I never
told you that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So they were playing out somewhere, like I said, maybe Valley Forge or something, and Judy Garland was to be the star. And she was 3 hours late because she was just and it's really a shame, but she was an absolute wreck.
Mm.
And I'm just mentioning that just because I think that was the other thing. It was like, no matter where you go or what you do, you need to be responsible.
Right. That's very true.
Basically.
Now, one of your CDs, you know, you've dedicated to the memory of your father.
Hmm.
What were some of the emotional triggers behind that particular tribute?
Well, first of all, it's called Honoring My Roots. And I think there were two really big triggers. One was the fact that I thought that my father had not received the recognition or even the commercial success that he should have gotten But of course, everybody's going to feel that about their mother or their father if they're a musician. No, and they don't quote unquote make it, sort of, so to speak. I mean, Daddy knew everybody because he worked all over the United States and he worked around the world and he worked a lot in Las Vegas. So he knew them all. He was very good friends with Ella Fitzgerald, Sammy Davis. He knew them all. Absolutely. But he didn't make it to the limelight, so to speak. So the emotional trigger for the album was, one, I felt like I had to make good, so to speak, on his name, you know, honor him for what he had done. And the other thing, because it's called Honoring My Roots, it also is referring to my African American roots, my African heritage, even though many Black Americans, we don't know exactly where in Africa we've come from, but obviously we know we've come from Africa. So it was a bit of that as well in there for me. Yeah, just to give praise to my ancestors.
Well, now you're going to, as we said, you're going to be at Mayam
yes,
tomorrow night.
Tomorrow, yes.
Okay.
At 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Now, with that show and your career, do you see how somehow you're fulfilling your dad's musical legacy?
Well, absolutely. And I feel extremely, extremely fortunate and extremely blessed because here in Spain, I've been very lucky. People really have recognized me and they have given me a lot of respect. The most important thing always had been for me to have respect from musicians, even if I never became famous, which I haven't become, but I'm actually okay with that. I always just wanted the respect of the musicians, because jazz musicians, when they are real jazz musicians, are they're the cream of the crop.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know?
Well, we'll be back to talk more with Violetta right after this.
Happy talk, keep talking happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You gotta have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how you gonna have a dream come true? About a moon floating in the sky, looking like a lily on a lake. Talk about a bird learning how to fly, making all the music he can make. Happy talk, keep talking a happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You gotta have a dream. If you don't have a dream, how you gonna have a dream come true? Talk about a star looking like a toy, peeking the branches of a tree. Talk about a girl, talk about a boy, counting all the ripples on the sea. Happy talk, keep talking a happy talk. Talk about things you'd like to do. You gotta have a dream. If you don't have a dream,
that was Happy Talk with Nancy Wilson. Comes from a great album with Nancy Wilson and Cannonball Adderley, his quintet, and with his brother Ray on trumpet. It's fantastic. It's the kind of thing that, of those records you need to have in your collection, that album is one of them. But now, it kind of, you know, again, we were talking about, you know, you want to add it to your collection, and it makes sense. It's again a classic song, but it brings to mind to me some other things. There was a story, a poem, I think, by Maya Angelou. You know, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Mm-hmm. And it traces the life of a young woman dealing with feminist and racist barriers, traumatic experiences, and shaping her own life in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you or do you see yourself or anything of yourself in this story? Because, you know, in some ways you are the caged bird that sings.
Well, I don't feel like a caged bird. There was a time when I did, because growing up as an African American in the United States was very challenging. Because the first kind of impressions that you begin to develop around yourself when you're growing up black in the United States is that somehow, in some way, you've been born into the wrong race, because it suddenly looks like, or you begin to suddenly realize, hold on, I don't have all the things that the others have. And the others, of course, are generally white people, Caucasians. So growing up, I began to form an idea of being a victim, like I was born into the wrong race. What happened here? You know, how could this be and whatnot? And of course, I brought that with me when I came to Spain. But over the years and through working on myself, and that's where I'm very happy and proud of myself. I've done loads of therapy, but the biggest thing that's worked for me has been meditation.
Hmm.
Vipassana meditation is the last type of meditation that I've come to, because I've tried all types of meditations. And with doing that meditation, I was able to release a lot of ideas and pretty much wrong beliefs about myself. So I don't feel like a victim anymore of racism. I feel I've transformed that. I feel much more satisfied with myself, much more self-possessed, like I know who I am. And I feel I have a strength of character. And I think that's what the poem is about, really, Maya Angelou's poem, Why I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. It's about strength of character and also love of literature. So for me, that would translate to love of music,
mm-hmm.
which helped me transform my life.
Well,
really.
That's the thing. You know, originally when I read it, I saw, or I thought I saw, what she was trying to say, in that we are black people in America at that time, caged birds, and that we were able to see the opportunity that was out there, but we couldn't touch it.
Yeah, we couldn't
be a part of it.
Yeah.
And that because of that, we had to have, you know, alternatives that allowed us to have an existence.
Yeah, and to express that frustration.
Right,
no?
Right. So we sang, and
we danced.
And we wrote, and we did so many creative things, and until we had the chance, ultimately, to get out of the cage.
Mm.
Now, you recently added a new facet to your persona as a radio personality here on English Radio on Wednesdays with a group of women who call and probably see themselves as movers and shakers.
Mm-hmm.
What needs to be moved and shaken in our world today?
Well, that's a great question, Virgil. Everybody and everything needs to be moved and shaken in this world today, because we are living in very challenging and trying times, and I feel a lot of fragmentation, you could say, you know, happening. Everything is being torn apart. I think our institutions and things like that, some of them do need to be torn apart, as we know. So I feel like my responsibility as an artist, and now as a co-host of the radio show Movers and Shakers here in Barcelona, it's about the responsibility of helping people to realize that they need to wake up, basically, and take a look at themselves first and foremost.
We need to be woke, as it's
said. We need to be woke.
Right.
You got that right. And that's what I feel. That's what I feel. Everybody needs to be moved and shaken. No?
Okay. Well, a lot of the artists today, like Robert De Niro, has come out to express their opinion about many things in life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this is an important thing to do, and what are some of the things that you're passionate about?
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. It's important. As I was saying before, as an artist, I I absolutely and firmly believe that it is our duty to guide people and to inspire people to be the best that they can possibly be. And not necessarily to influence, because I think influence, there's always a kind of a hidden agenda when you try to influence people. But my idea is to guide people to be, as I said, the best possible person they can be. And how do I do that? Well, with my shows, I have a platform, and I use my shows to elevate people's consciousness, basically. You know? So tomorrow, our show, I'll be playing with Ismael Dueñas. He is a fantastic jazz pianist. And tomorrow at the Mayam Museum here in Barcelona, at 6 o'clock, we will be talking about building bridges through music. So instead of worrying so much about building walls, as we know that this has become the thing now, we want to talk about building bridges. And the point I want to make, and this is what I'll be sharing with people, you know, when you think of the four directions, north, south, east, and west, one cannot exist without the other. You won't know what north is if you don't have south, and you certainly won't know what the west is if you don't have the east. So
you must have the contrary.
That's right.
Element.
And you must be able to arrive to both ends. And how do you do that? By crossing a bridge.
Well, it is indicative of what's happening globally in that, you know, people have taken positions. Mm-hmm. You know, they're ultra right or conservative or liberal, and they don't look at the contrary position to see, you know, what is really being said, what is really there.
Yeah.
And there is no bridge that's being done. People are just holding on to polar opposites, and we are fragmenting ourselves even more and more and more.
Hiding behind those walls.
Absolutely.
Those perceived walls.
Well, they become reality if you allow them to remain.
Oh, absolutely.
Great. Now, you recently participated in an event sponsored by the UN that addressed the needs of black people globally. What made you want to be a part of this?
Well, it was an event that was happening in Spain, and it was particular to Spain. That is, it was an event celebrating 10 years. It's the decade. The decade of people of African descent. That's what it is.
Right.
And we're in our third year now, and most people don't know that because it hasn't been widely advertised. However, a commission was coming to Spain to basically sit down and have talks with the Spanish government to see what was happening with the black Spanish population, because most people are under the impression that in Spain, it's a two-tiered society, as in there are white Spaniards and then there are gypsies, Roma gypsies. And people actually don't realize, actually, there is a black Spanish indigenous autochthonous population.
Right.
And they consider themselves to be Spaniards because they were born and raised here. And then we also have Afro-Catalans. So we have Afro-Spaniards and then Afro-Catalans, which are the ones who are born and raised here in Catalonia. So the event was basically to come to Spain and put a bit of pressure on the Spanish government to take a look at the laws and what it's doing to enforce certain things for the black population, basically. Mm. Yeah, because, yes, there is racism happening and whatnot, and so that's why they were here. And so what motivated me was the fact that I could have a voice and give an opinion. And I talked about racism in the media, basically, how black people are portrayed in the Spanish media, not global, but Spanish media.
Perfect. Well, you're listening to 106.9 FM, Radio Canal Barcelona, English Radio in the Morning. We'll be back to talk more with Violeta right after this.
Everything must change. nothing stays the same. Everyone will change. No one stays the same. The young become the old. Mysteries unfold. That's the way of time. Nothing and no one goes unchanged. There are not many things in this life that you can be sure. Except the rain comes from the clouds, the sun lights up the sky, and hummingbirds do fly. Winter turns to spring. A wounded heart will heal. Never much too soon. Yes, everything will change. 'Cause there are not many things in this life that you can be sure. Except the rain comes from the clouds, the sun lights up the sky, hummingbirds do fly. Winter turns to spring. And a wounded heart will heal. Never much too soon. Yes, everything was changed. Life that you can be sure of. comes from the clouds. The sun lights up the sky. Rain comes from the clouds. The sun lights up the sky. Makes me cry. Everything must change. Very,
very nice. That was Everything Must Change by Karen Allison. That was a song, you might have heard it, a lot of folks have done it, but originally it was a song written by Bernie Iger, and he and Quincy Jones had done it, and I think it was the album Q's Juke Joint.
Was it on that one?
I think it was on that one, yeah. Mm-hmm. And originally it was James Ingram who sang it. And then Donny Hathaway has done a version, and I'm just talking here with Miss Violetta, and she's going to think about getting into one of her acts sooner or later. Mm. But you can be free to call into us at 93-468-5555 if you want to talk about anything or talk with our guests as well. Now, tomorrow night, as we mentioned, Maya Musica will host Nuestras Divas con Violeta Curry y Ismael Dueñas at the Museo Europeo de Arte Moderno. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've never been to this place, it's a very rich, sophisticated, warm, and comfortable place to hear music. You've performed here before, a couple of times, I think.
I think this is my fourth year.
Okay. Now, how will this night be different?
Tomorrow's going to be different because, first of all, I'm not doing it with the pianist that I have been working with for so many years, Jaume Vilaseca, who is Catalan, because Jaume this year couldn't do it. And I'll be working with Ismael Dueñas, who is another Catalan, fantastic jazz pianist. And we have chosen repertoire that Jaume and I haven't done. And so we're going to be doing a little bit of everything just to show how we build bridges in music. A bit of Billy Joel, Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, Aretha Franklin, we're going to do a jazz standard, and then we're going to do some Beatles.
Hmm.
So that's why it's going to be different. And tomorrow I'm going to try my hand at playing the cajon, which is that famous Spanish instrument, which is like a box and you sit on it and play it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a percussion instrument. So
we also call it a beatbox back in the States.
Oh, right, yeah. But I think it's originally either from Cuba, and then it came over to Spain, or vice versa.
Okay. Now, it's interesting, you know, when you start putting together a set of music.
Mm.
Now, how did you come about building this particular set that you're going to be doing tomorrow night?
Well, Ismael and I started talking about the music that we liked, and we began to see how we actually coincided with various genres of music. So as I said, you know, Billy Joel, who could be considered a pop singer, but you know, one of the greatest songs ever written, as far as I'm concerned, is the song we're doing tomorrow by Billy Joel, which is "Just the Way You Are."
Mm.
For example, that's a gorgeous song.
It is.
And then we just started talking about things that we liked, and both of us happened to be absolute, I don't know, locos for the Beatles and their music. And as I said earlier in the show, you know, it was through listening to the Beatles that I realized that I could harmonize, and kind of where I said, oh, this is what I want to do, basically. And pretty much the same with Ismael. Listening to the Beatles, I think he might have made the decision he wanted to be a pianist.
Hmm.
So that's what brought us together, really.
Your love of the Beatles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, well, originally it was because we needed to do a gig. We somebody rang us about a gig, and we quickly got together and rehearsed some jazz standards to do this gig that was needed. And then in our breaks for that gig, we started talking about the music we loved as well, you know, apart from jazz. And that's what brought us together.
So are you going to, the top of the set is going to be Billy Joel?
Yeah. We're going to do some Billy Joel. We're going to do some Aretha Franklin, some Stevie Wonder.
So you're going to do some Marvin Gaye. Which one of Marvin's are you
going
to do?
We're going to do Mercy, Mercy Me and What's Going On.
Hmm.
And that's where I'm going to be playing the cajon the beatbox.
Right. Well, it's interesting because, you know, Mercy, Mercy was one of Cannonball's, you know, songs with Joe Zawinul.
Oh, I've just learned something new.
I think Joe Zawinul actually wrote Mercy, Mercy.
Did he?
That's right. It's a different one. You know, Marvin did Mercy, Mercy Me.
Right.
And Joe Zawinul did Mercy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I think
I stand corrected.
Okay,
I stand corrected. I had a senior moment.
This is from Marvin Gaye's. You know, when he was the one. He was the one, really, the only one beginning to talk about the ecology, and this was about that. And he was so far ahead of his time, Marvin Gaye. And I have a lot of respect for him, a lot of time, and a lot of respect. So I decided, yeah, this would be a good tune to do.
Well, it's something you talk about. He talked about obviously the climate, the environment, social injustice. I mean, he went out on a limb, you know, early on in terms of a lot of, you know, pop singers at the time, and being able to express opinions that related to society as a whole.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, when you start thinking about that and, you know, looking at that, how then, you know, as we have a show, you know, we talk about the music leading into one song to another, but also at the same time it leads into the commentary on the show.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go then from Billy Joel to Who to Marvin and then ultimately to close with whoever? What's the theme that you're going to be, in fact, writing?
Yeah, the theme, the leitmotif is about building bridges, basically, and how, you know, one music comes out of another. So really and truly, doing the jazz piece that we're doing, out of jazz came soul, and out of soul came funk and rhythm, rhythm and blues, and all of that. So basically, the show is about that. And also, the Beatles are the first ones to say, when they explain about their life story, how it all started for them with black music.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I'm bringing it all together.
Okay. I think, you know, if you look at, you know, Billy Preston was the fifth Beatle, basically.
Yeah. He used to play on their, he played on their, Hey Jude, was it? No.
He played on several of them.
And he
worked with them in the studio a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, he worked with Rolling Stones and all the rest of it. You know? So, I mean, we look at, you know, the influence of black music on, you know, the whole British pop scene.
Mm-hmm.
It was, again, a bridge that kind of
absolutely
went over.
And I think you probably know this, but do you remember James Brown saying that, yes, he had been famous, he had started to be famous in the States with black people, but the thing he said that really made him famous, that catapulted his career, was the fact that the Beatles had mentioned that they listened to his music, and then all of a sudden, white kids started listening to James Brown.
Right. Right. I mean, there was no question about it. I think not only James Brown, you started looking at Tina Turner.
Yeah.
You know, Tina, you know, the crossover, you know, when, you know, Mick and, you know, the Stones were starting talking about what she was doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, again, you talk about bridges, and, you know, we talk about the bridges we have here in Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a multicultural society here you know, a rich tradition of its own in terms of Catalan music and that. How does what you do kind of create a bridge between, let's say, American society and Catalan Spanish society with the people that we have in your shows coming around you?
First and foremost, it's just even through the audience, no? Because most of the people who come to my show happen to be Catalans, although we do get in the odd tourist and whatnot. And so I'm singing music, I'm singing in English. I mean, I sing in Spanish and Catalan as well. However, most of my shows I do in English. And this is bringing an element to them that maybe normally in their everyday lives they wouldn't have. And then working with the different Catalan pianists, the thing of it is that since they are musicians, they've listened so much to music anyway and so many different types. And most of the Spanish/Catalan jazz musicians here, of course, have based their careers on Black American jazz, basically.
Absolutely. You know,
so yeah. They and a lot of times they even teach me stuff that I'm like, oh really, I never who's that, you know, things like that, because sometimes when it's your own culture you even forget to mm-hmm. actually give more space to mm-hmm. the different voices, and here they've been very open about
it's true.
Music, you know.
Well, we'll be back for some closing comments with Violetta right after this.
So this next song is an old song too, not the last couple I played you, those are new, but yeah, this one was a tough one, you know, because I quit making music for a long time. I didn't think I deserved to make music anymore, you know. And, yeah, it's called Leave the Light On. I definitely still leave it on, too. Man. Myself with a dirty face, I cut my luck with a dirty ace. I leave the light on, I leave the light on. I went from zero to minus ten. I drank your wine and I stole your man. I leave the light on, I leave that light on. Daddy ain't that bad, he just plays rough. I ain't that scarred when I'm covered up. I leave the light on, I leave that light on. Little girl hiding underneath the bed. Was it something I did? Must be something I said. I leave the light on, better leave the light on. Cause I wanna love, and I wanna live. I don't know much about it. I never did, no, no. 17 and I'm all messed up inside. I cut myself just to feel alive. I leave the light on. Yeah, I leave the light on. 21 on the run, on the run, on the run. From myself and everyone. I leave the light on. Better leave the light on. Oh, I wanna love, and I wanna live. I don't know much about it. I need the tears. Can the damage be undone? I swear to God that I'd never be what I become. Lucky stars and fairy tales, I'm gonna bathe myself in a wishing well. And pretty scars from cigarettes I never will forget. I never will forget. I'm still afraid to be alone. Wish that the moon would follow me home. I'll leave the light on, I'll leave that light on. And don't you know that I ain't that bad, I'm just messed up. I ain't that sad, but I'm sad enough. And I wanna love, and I wanna live. Now I don't know much about it, and if it's yet, I don't know what to do. Can the damage be undone? I swear to God that I'd never be what
bless the child with the dirty face, who cuts her luck with a dirty ace. She leaves the light on. I'll still leave that light on. Oh,
and that was Leave the Light On by Beth Hart. Great, great, great talent singer, one of my favorite ones now. She's going to be in Barcelona in November at Bart's, I think, for a couple of nights. Definitely you have to see her because she brings her whole heart and puts it on the stage and, you know, just takes it down for you. Now, that was the song, you know, Leave the Light On. It's like talking about all the dark places in our life or inside of us that we sometimes are afraid to go back to. And being able to be motivated in your singing, is there a place there that you have a you leave the light on for that motivates you in your singing?
Oh, definitely. As I was explaining to you before we in the break, that is, I had stopped singing some years ago because I was extremely angry at this conception I had that I was not making it in the world. I wasn't rich. I wasn't famous. What was happening? Here I am singing, and it's not happening for me. So I was very, very angry at this force that we call God, this thing that we think is outside of ourselves. I've since then learned differently. And then I had this epiphany when I was in one of my singing classes with this great teacher I had here in Barcelona, Marta Gonzalez. And she was making me breathe, and I was really working on my breath, and I suddenly had this moment where I fell to my knees, screaming and crying and saying, I just want to sing. And then I realized it wasn't what singing was supposed to give me. It was what I was supposed to be giving through my singing. Mm. And that was the service, basically, of elevating people's vibrations. So when people come to see me, just by the nature of music, its power, and its ability to build bridges, well, that's what I was doing. I was making people feel. I was making people come in contact with their true emotions, and that this was my service. This was what I was here to do.
As Bob Dylan said, you got to serve somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it's about.
It is. Well, be sure to go out to Mayan tomorrow night to hear Violetta live in song, and then check her out and the other Movers and Shakers on Wednesdays here on English Radio from 11 to 12 on 106.9 FM. It's been good really having you here again, as always. And unfortunately, I won't be there tomorrow night, but I'm going to have folks there in my stead.
Oh,
you know,
thank
and
you.
I think people, you know, need to, if you've never seen her in person, you owe it to yourself to come to the beautiful setting that's Mayam tomorrow night at 6 o'clock and catch Violetta live. And I'm going to leave you with one of her other songs. And it's the way we feel about all of our listeners out there. It's called Unconditional Love. Have a great one, Barcelona.
Bye, Barcelona.
Unconditional love,
the sweet love I give to you.
Unconditional love
is the holy true love that's true. Hey, talking fine.
Unconditional love,
about loving my man and getting mine. But this is a message from me to you about the great well of love, so strong and divine. A I'm talking about that love supreme, by the word of Coltrane and Dr. Martin Luther King. Yes, like my daddy gave me and mama tea, like anyone can have. About the great will of God.